It's time for another episode of the VRMA Arrival Podcast. I'm your host, Alexa Schlosser, editor of VRMA's publications, and here with me today is Andy Newman, founder and CEO of Newman Hospitality. I hope you guys enjoy our conversation. So hi, Andy. I was hoping you could just kind of introduce yourself and tell us a little bit about yourself, your company, how you got involved in the short-term rental industry, and anything else you'd like to share as an intro.
Thank you, Alexa. Glad to be here. And yeah, I think one thing in common about this industry is everyone seems to have done something completely different before.
Yep.
I seem to be no exception. I came from banking, a career in money center banks, which seemed to be completely disconnected with what I'm doing now. Then I did some coaching as well, and I did the two simultaneously, sort of life and business coaching. But one thing that was important for me throughout my life, independent of banking and careers, was my deep passion for travel and for cultural exchanges. And that came from growing up in a home where my mother was from South America. My father was American. We had multiple languages spoken at home. So when I had the opportunity in school, I did a junior year abroad, and I lived in France and put on that backpack every weekend, traveled different cities during the summers. When all that was over, I always had this yearning for being able to repeat that and prolong it. And it didn't seem to be possible until this company appeared out of nowhere, this Airbnb disruptor.
Mm-hmm.
Which I immediately latched onto, and I had to do business travel. And I said, well, why go to boring hotels? Let me try this short-term rental concept. Mm-hmm. And so I became at first an Airbnb operator, one of the early Airbnb operators. And I did it with friends and family.
Okay.
For free, just to get my feet wet, to understand what was going on. And in that year and a half, I discovered Verma, and I said, oh, wow, I need to have a foot in this industry. This is actually an industry that existed way before Airbnb, mm-hmm. all around hospitality. So I went to a Verma conference, I believe it was 2014, and I never stopped going.
Oh, that's great.
That's been so good for my education, for the networking, for learning from other people. But I realized quickly that I needed to have a foot on both sides, that Airbnb was there and it was there to stay, and you couldn't fight it. You had to join it. And Verma was extremely important for a lot of things, for the learning, the advocacy, the processes.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when I made the company, and I made an investment. I found my PMS. I started, and I also hired people. So that's really where it all came from. And what's really cool, though, is that very soon after, I realized that I was still doing the same thing. I was no longer managing money, but I was managing one of the most important assets that someone has, which is their home. So
yeah.
The whole conversation about managing assets was very similar.
Sure. Do you remember how you learned of VRMA?
Yeah, I got an email. From a company, and it said they were trying to sell me their software, and they said, "Well, we're going to be at the VRMA conference," and it was like a month away. Okay, I'm going to be there for sure.
Yeah.
There's a conference, and there's an industry I want in. I want to understand it. I want to be a part of it.
That's awesome. I mean, you said 2014, so that's almost 10 years ago. That's I haven't been involved with the association for that long, so I wonder what it was like back then. It's cool.
Yeah, it was cool. I can remember that feeling of being in that conference hall with all these vendors, and it was like being in a candy store for the first time.
Yeah, I bet. That's awesome.
You wanted to talk to everyone.
So you started Newman Hospitality. That was, when did you start that company?
2014.
Okay. And then I guess, what would you say what makes it special, or like, how has it changed and evolved over those 9 years, I guess, now?
Yeah, we're doing a lot of the things that everybody else does that we're told to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I wouldn't say that those are the things that make us special. I think what makes us special is our focus on hospitality, which is different. Mm-hmm. Everybody knows good hospitality in hotels like the Ritz and the Four Seasons and how you get treated. But very often what's missing in our industry is how we treat the people that provide the hospitality, how we treat our employees. And I think that is one thing that makes us very special. We believe in hospitality from the inside out, that if we take care of our team really, really well, unreasonably well, they will in turn take care of our guests. So we strongly emphasize that as our focus. That is our key asset. And everything that we do is really about providing, and we, our slogan, our mantra is a home for everyone, including our employees. And first and foremost, our employees. Mm-hmm. We want them to feel at home. It's not just a place they come to work, but it's a place that is safe. It's a place that that they can learn and make progress. So I think that that is a key, that's a key component of what we do. And secondly, is diversity. We are extremely diverse. We have three key centers, US, Philippines, and Colombia. Mm-hmm. And each of those centers brings different skills, different strengths, different cultures that just do so much to enrich us and really to be able to provide a true 24/7 hospitality. So when you call us, it's not about somebody reading a script and saying, oh, you'll get a call from headquarters at 9 a.m. on Monday. No. When they call, they get an intelligent person that knows what we do, knows who we are, is part of the team, and can resolve issues immediately. So I think that that is really important. And diversity doesn't go just with the countries. It's the cultures. It's the demographics. So we're big on having all demographics. We have core people that started the company, Marissa and I. We're in our 60s, in our early 60s, very active, love what we do. And we bring a lot of experience to the table, which the team really respects and looks up to. And then we have a big group of people in their 30s that they're all about the Gen Z and the technology. And Marissa and I have a lot of respect for them and for what they bring to the table. So we believe in leveraging all those strengths, and diversity is a key to our formula.
Yeah. Well, I think that that makes sense, especially, you know, people are talking more and more now, especially with the like hiring and retaining people is really hard these days. So it sounds like having that employee first mentality is important in order to keep those people wanting to stay there. And so you're not having to continually rehire new people.
Yeah, absolutely. And we've discovered that obviously pay is important, and as we've grown and matured, we've also focused on very competitive pay, but we've also been really surprised that you can hire people just by really delivering on the culture and explaining to them that they're going to have flexibility, that we really care about work-life balance. Mm-hmm. That can be a much more powerful currency, and a really powerful currency in terms of retaining people for a long time.
Yeah. It was a question I had for later on, but since you brought it up, work-life balance, I you claim to have sort of mastered this. Like, what did it take to, you know, were you always this good at it? Did it take some hard lessons that you had to learn along the way?
Or? Oh, absolutely. It was about hell and back. Yeah. You master something when you've actually failed at it. So at some point, yeah, I was not very balanced. I was very type A, win, 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 be the top producer, compete at all costs. And I think my health was paying a price for it. My family was paying a price for it. And at one point I said, no, I don't want this. There's got to be another way. Mm-hmm. And I looked for structures, and I found a coaching program that was really, really cool. It was all about work-life balance, but not that you just need work-life balance, but saying, hey, it makes sense because you're going to be happier and you're going to be more productive. Mm-hmm. See, the paradigm, especially in America, is this work-life balance thing. No. One day, when this happens and that happens and that happens, there'll be work-life balance. It doesn't really work that way. You have to begin now, and you have to cultivate it, and it has to be embedded in your culture. And it's something that you have to build habits, mm-hmm. and it has to happen on a day-to-day basis. So for me, it happened earlier when I was in banking. I was commuting 2.5 hours a day, and I told my manager, look, if I keep doing this, I'm going to have an accident and it's not going to be pretty.
Yeah.
Allow me to work from home. And it all escalated from there, taking more time off, more vacations. But if you look at the body of evidence today in neuroscience, it's really clear. Being active, resting is not just good for your mind. It's not just good for your body. It's good for your mind. Now, you're better at it. So when you play doing what you love, a hobby, an activity, a sport, and you come back to work, you are more creative. You do much more in a shorter period of time. And I think that that's really what has driven this. And I what I see in our industry is a lot of people selling out, and they're sort of selling out because they're burning out. It really doesn't have to be that way. If you have the structures, if you have the technology, if you invest properly in delegating, you really can have the cake and eat it too. Yeah. You can have your great company that has impact on its employees, impact on its guests, but also you can have a life having fun. You can travel. And I find that the two can overlap. So for example, I've discovered when I look at the growth in my business, at least 30% of my growth, of my current inventory, has come from being on the beach, having fun, doing what I love, which is kiteboarding. And when you're in that happy environment, you show up differently, you connect differently, you might be more inspiring and more fun to connect with. So I never go to the beach thinking, oh, let's see what clients I'm going to find today. Not at all. It's distant from my mind. But my mind is in a different place. It's calm, and it's in a place where I can have make these special connections that will lead to business. And so I think it requires a bit of a leap of faith. But once you start, the dividends pay very quickly.
Yeah. I mean, clearly your business is a testament to that. I saw that there was triple digit growth in the past 3 years. I mean, if that works the way you're saying it is, that seems like a good way to do it. Can you tell me a little bit about that growth? Like, what does that actually mean in terms of, how does that growth, is it in specific areas, or like, was it kind of the expansion of the Philippines or Colombia, or tell me a little bit about that?
Yeah. Well, the expansion in the Philippines and Colombia was, that's all our employees, and that was critical for growth. So we have been strong believers that you have to, there's a cycle of, sort of, is it the chicken or the egg? Do I grow and then I set up the Philippines and Colombia, or do I set up Philippines and Colombia and then I grow? We believe you set the infrastructure first. You are prepared before you need it, because when you need it, you're late. When you're needed, you're already behind, you're already struggling. So so we have the infrastructure, that's important. And the key components for our growth have been conventional. So we do the digital marketing, we use key industry agencies that know our industry, and we have it divided in two. We have marketing for direct bookings, which are absolutely vital to autonomy and to growth. And secondly, we also market for inventory. But what we've realized, going back to hospitality, I'm really surprised how many homes have come from actual guests, people that come and stay with us because their place was rented. And when they arrive at our place, they're surprised at how we do things. They're surprised that we have a gift. They're surprised that we communicate physically on the phone with them two or three times during their stay. And inevitably, they end up saying, no, we want you to manage our place, because if that's the way you treated us. So that has been really, really good. Secondly, we have been very focused on real estate. And I know that there's a lot of managers that make real estate an important component. I was hesitant to do that because I believed something that I heard in early conferences was that you don't want to do real estate because then a realtor will never refer you. Well, I've discovered that that is not at all true. You can be a realtor, you can work with realtors, and you can be very valuable to the real estate industry. And we do those three things. We don't show up as a threat to them, because we tell them that we basically don't do listings. When our investors want to buy, we use our license. But we give realtors a lot of value. We give them projections. We have a full AirDNA national subscription, mm-hmm. which allows us to have a powerful tool. We use key data as well. So we help realtors. I'm very active in my, I belong to a national real estate agency, and we have positioned ourselves as the short-term rental specialist for that agency. So anything that's short-term rental, they're always calling on us. Mm-hmm. And that has been absolutely key in growing our business. So I think those are the, and by the way, the other thing that we do is we identify new geographic locations.
Yeah.
That is really important because that creates a lot of energy. Hey, we got a new location. And that, mm-hmm. that brings me to my last thing is that we grow with our own clients. And we think that that is much, much more efficient. First of all, we're looking for clients that have important resources. Mm-hmm. Generally, they're investors. And generally, they're not just buying one property, but they'll end up buying multiple properties. So they start with one. It works. Right. And we bring them new opportunities continuously. And it's so much easier to grow with current clients than mm-hmm. to look for new ones. Because current clients are already part of your culture. So I think those things combined give us multiple sources of continuous growth.
Yeah, that's great. I mean, you mentioned sort of these geographic trends. What are you seeing in terms of what are the trends right now with the hot areas in the US?
Yeah, you know, I think there's a misconception about the hot areas. Like I'm from Miami, of course, was there 26 years. Miami's super hot, but you got to be careful with a place like Miami because the costs are also super hot.
Sure.
The valuations are super hot. So while the ADR is really high, so is everything else. Mm-hmm. So we have shifted gears to look for those, let's call them off the radar places that mm-hmm. are interesting. And we start from the basis that there's demand everywhere for short-term rentals. And we are in so many places where people say to us, huh? Who would want to go there? Well, people always want to go almost everywhere.
Yeah.
Surprise. And there's, so what we look for is we call it pillars of demand. And we look for at least four pillars of demand. And everybody knows one of them, which is tourism. And everybody's really focused on tourism. Well, guess what? Places that are only tourism, we don't like them. So we would never go to a Cape Cod. We wouldn't go to an Outer Banks. We wouldn't go to these places where demand is busting through the seams 3 months of the year.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the year, the poor manager sitting there nervously thinking about how am I going to pay the bills? Or are these people that came this year going to come back next year? We want places where we can rent year round. We want places that have low investment costs. So we like the Midwest. Getting down to concrete, we like the Midwest. We, for example, we're in Indiana. We're looking at Missouri, St. Louis. We like these areas where we can operate, where we have low expenses, where we have, let's call it climate resilience.
Mm-hmm.
That's a key area that we work on and we study very carefully. We don't want to be in a place where one storm can take out your inventory.
Yeah. Great
and point. It happens. It really does happen. Where you're, if you're in the epicenter of climate change, you have a lot of wild cards going on. One is the next storm. Mm-hmm. When is it? It's not if, it's when. Two, what's going to happen with insurance? So going back to Miami, great place, but lots of risks.
Sure.
We talk to investors that buy multiple homes, and we, just like in a stock portfolio, you don't want to put all your investments in one stock, one home. Mm-hmm. Do the same thing here. We want to say, okay, how can we combine homes geographically so that your income streams are more even rather than being on a roller coaster, right?
Yeah.
And that's what we try to do. We try to find that geographic diversity but yeah, Midwest, I like places with low costs.
Sure. Yeah, no, that makes sense. I really like that approach. And it obviously comes from your banking background that you have that sort of long-term growth strategy. I think that's really smart. I guess, do you have any, you know, advice for property managers, you know, in this space?
I do. Let's property managers. A little bit of advice is, you know, really focus on the medium and long term, and don't make, you know, don't get seduced by quick, rich, get rich schemes. You really have to go for the journey and enjoy the process, because building a business can be a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. I would say weed the garden. And let me tell you what I mean by that. When we start a business, we say yes to everything. And I did that for probably too long. Mm-hmm. And I ended up in neighborhoods where I shouldn't have been in. So right now we're entering a transition where we're getting really, really clear on who we want to have as a client. And we've gotten pretty good at, you know, maybe the word firing is too strong, but yeah, at really getting rid of the wrong opportunities. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you how good that is for growth, because bad situations, bad clients, and we divide it in three. We divide it in home, quality of the home, quality of the location, meaning neighborhood, mm-hmm. and quality of the owner. And if those three things are bad, you got to get rid of them. Because they take a disproportionate amount of your resources, a disproportionate amount of your energy. Mm-hmm. It's not fair really for your other clients. If you think about it, if all the resources are taken away from the good client to the bad client, something is wrong. And once you get comfortable and confident with getting rid of them, mm-hmm. it becomes easy. And my son did something that I thought was brilliant. We had one client, very nice client. This wasn't really the owner. It was the location. The ADR was tiny, $40, $50, $60 a night. We just can't make money with that. And they were also too involved, too micromanaging. They wanted to do the cleanings in order to save them. So you can imagine when they take you out of your processes,
yeah.
it becomes even more inefficient to manage. Mm-hmm. So my son gave them a call, and they started by asking for a discount in our management fee. Look at the irony, right? It's the least productive, and they're asking for it.
Yeah.
Well, my son said, as a matter of fact, I wanted to talk to you because I think we've been talking and realizing that you would be an ideal candidate for self-management. Is that brilliant or what?
That is the spin of the century. I like that. Right?
And you know, here they were getting fired and feeling good about it. And it's interesting. Yeah. But by the way, this wasn't, you know, a manipulative thing. We were serious about it. We thought they were good for self-management. They were already getting involved in cleaning. They lived right next door. But what I'm saying is, yes, you need to weed the garden, and there's nice ways of doing it. And it will really change your you know, your energy and how inspired you are and how motivated you are to grow. So that's key advice that I have for people that are new in the industry. And third is, you know, you really have to have the right people and the right technology. And it's not one over the other. It's both. Both will make you very successful.
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I guess my last question is just your overall thoughts on the health of the industry. You know, obviously it boomed during the pandemic, which I'm sure you saw. And then some people were expecting a bit of a bust post-pandemic. That didn't really come to pass, but obviously things are shaky with the economy a little bit still, and obviously the real estate market. I'm just curious what your overall thoughts are about this industry, which is, you know, relatively new still.
I agree with what you just said. It's relatively new, and I am very excited about this industry. And going back again to banking, I mean, banking is so mature. Your ability to differentiate yourself from another manager mm-hmm. is minuscule.
Yeah,
everybody does kind of the same thing. In our industry, it's not. It is so fragmented. And if you think about it, depending on the market, anywhere from 60 to 80% of the people don't get the basics right. And the beauty is the people that are Verma members and that go to Verma conferences are the rest, are the 20% or the 30% that do things right, that deliver a good product, that deliver good hospitality, that use technology, and that have the people. So first and foremost, we are in the early growth stages as an industry. But secondly, the people that our Verma members are going to grow at 2 to 3 times the rate of the industry, just because of what I said. We have the right resources and people. And you have this barbell where at one end in our industry, you have the mega, mega institutional players. And we know there's some that do a really, really good job, but there's a lot, and some of the highest profile names that do a terrible job when it comes to hospitality. Mm. And a terrible job when it comes to generating profits for their investors, mm-hmm. right? And then you have, on the other extreme, the YouTubers want to get rich quickly people, right? I call that the dumb money.
Yeah.
Because they come in and they think they're going to go sip pina coladas on a beach in Thailand, and these VAs are magically going to train themselves and run their business. Well, surprise, surprise. It really doesn't happen. And now that the market has normalized post-COVID, what's happening is those people are getting washed out, which is good for us. Mm-hmm. You know, the more traditional Verma type manager, I think has an even better opportunity in this environment, because we're no longer in this crazy, everybody wants to do it. It's no longer the case. So now it requires doing your homework. It requires having the right team in place. And talking about trends, I see a few other trends coming in our industry. I see, you know, what I call the post-COVID normalization and amnesia. And amnesia, because people don't want to be reminded about COVID. They're sick and tired of it. Everybody wants to move on. So if you're a manager, I say, if you still have a COVID script speech, get rid of it. Don't want to hear that, mm-hmm. right? And I really, you know, a lot of these trends of longer reservations, we're going back to the pre-COVID. ADRs are going back to the pre-COVID. So you got to be really, really sharp in your pricing. Mm-hmm. You can't really just lay back and watch it happen. If you do, you're going to have occupancy issues. But I'm going back to your question. I'm very optimistic about the industry. I can't imagine a better industry to be in right now. And it's really nice when you see the results, when you see happy guests that come back year after year. And so I think that we have our best days are ahead of us, not behind us.
No, that's awesome. And I appreciate you you pumping up VRMA. We obviously couldn't agree with you more. It's the professionalism of this industry. I think consumers are starting to realize that they don't want those sort of fly-by-night people. And in order to be professional, an association like VRMA is very helpful. And obviously property managers here are, you know, believing those same things about what professionalism means for this industry, because that's how an industry matures, right, and becomes more well thought of, I guess, by the public.
Agree. Yeah.
Well, I really appreciate you taking some time today, Andy. This has been outstanding to talk to you, and I definitely want to hear more about how your company continues to grow.
Thank you, Alexa. I enjoyed being here.
All right. Thanks a lot.